Thank you all very much. Before I read our passage for today, and it's a different one that's in your bulletin, as you might expect, the week sort of unfolded a little bit differently for me than I expected it to, and I just want to thank Jamie for playing with me, because that was something I have wanted us to do. I've wanted to share that song, and you know, just the moment had never come, and so today was the moment just because there wasn't the next moment. And I encourage you to find those moments, because if you wait for them, they don't always come. But I also want to say to you that one of the reasons that I wanted to play today with you, Jamie, is that in 10 years from now, I'll be going, yeah, I played with that guy. And sort of my goal for my guitar playing is to be what Jamie, be able to do with a lot of hard work what Jamie does naturally. But I'll also say that as you're thinking about images of the church, and we're going to talk about a few of them, I think the danger for this church for being around so long is you start thinking of the church like it's a 75 or 80-year-old person. What you ought to be thinking about it is that you're Jamie's age with an extreme wide-open door of what might be. And the danger is to think about, oh, it could be this or it could be that. Well, the what might be is just such potential. And the beautiful thing about this passage, and I'm going to read to you Matthew 14, and it is the Peter walking on the water, and it's a storm passage. And the beautiful thing I want you to pay attention to about Peter is that this is still early in the relationship that he had with Jesus, and Peter's not very good at it, but he's willing to not be good at it. And what you see in guys who we have so many of them, from Bob to Jared to Bob Clement, to these guys and Jamie, they play the guitar. I try to play the guitar. And the image that I have for Peter was Schopenhauer had a bassoon player he said was too good. He wanted somebody to play the piece who was trying to play it. And I think that's the beauty of life, is that we don't have to be good at it. We just got to try and play it. And certainly that's what Peter does. So I want you to breathe for a second, and then I want you to close your eyes and imagine that you're Peter in this passage. Listen for a word from God for you from Matthew 14. Immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went to the mountain by himself to pray. And when evening came, he was there alone. But by this time the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, Jesus came walking toward them on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, "It's a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart. It is I. Do not be afraid." And Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And Jesus said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came toward Jesus. When he noticed the strong wind, he became afraid and began to sink. And he cried out, "Lord, save me." And Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshiped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Friends, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Okay, you can open your eyes. If you're that person who needs to be told, you can open your eyes. That's good. And I want you to think about this passage, but I want to set up sort of why I chose. I was going to go Ecclesiastes 3, there's a time for every purpose, and I had it kind of nicely laid out in my head, a very, you know, time for this, and... But I got a phone call, and I got a phone call from Pansy Duke in Clemson, and I was thinking it was I've heard you were leaving, what are you going to do, I don't know, how do you not know phone call? But it wasn't. She called to tell me about Jeffrey Conover, and Jeffrey Conover was in the youth group back in the day when I was there, and Beth was a wee tyke, and Carrie and I were a heck of a lot younger. And Jeffrey was one of the most active people that I have ever had in any youth group. Jeffrey was a neon light in a world of 40-watt bulbs as a teenager. He was that hyperactive kid who came into a room screaming, "Yes!" And you're always saying, "Not now, Jeffrey, we're praying." Or not now, Jeffrey, here, take your Bible and open it up. Not now, Jeffrey, we're singing. Don't sing so loud and try not to sing off key. Jeffrey was a yes. Everywhere he went, he was active. He was loud and louder than loud. And even on a big old bus, 55 passengers, he could make it rock back and forth. So you can know what he did in cars and in vans. Not now, Jeffrey. Everybody's sleeping. Not now. We're trying to drive. And I thought about how in so many yeses, it was no, not now, no, and no. And there were ways that you said his name. He was Jeffrey. And for a while he was Jeff, though that really didn't work because he was still Jeffrey. And it wasn't Jeffery, it was Jeffrey with the emphasis on the last symbol. Jeffrey, come on, we're trying to go. And so I thought about his yes to life and how many no's there were. So when I heard that he died, all I had in my head was no, not now, not yet. All I had was no. And Jeffrey always, he stayed in touch with me. I mean, even through the years, I haven't talked to his parents since I left, but he'd always let me know. He went to the Air Force and he let me know. He moved to Florida, he let me know. He started back school, he let me know. So my thought was, no, how could he do this? He didn't let me know. All I had was no. And so they will be burying Jeffrey today in South Carolina, and his parents are going through that nightmare that you don't wish for anybody because it's against the grain. Parents aren't supposed to outlive their children. And that's a storm. And that's what storms look like. Not far from where I got that phone call, actually about 20 feet away, I was looking at the clock, I was putting on my robe, I was putting on the microphone when somebody called me on my cell phone right before worship. And nobody calls me on my cell phone before worship. I thought it was a wrong number, but it was Cecilia Manning. And then I had to come in here with a storm. And that was that Jimmy died in his backyard raking leaves. That's a storm. We know storms. By the river, the river came to us, 2010. That's a storm. And then we brought our own storm, and a little over a year later, we fought like hell. Don't tell the Biddlecombs. That's a storm. And what I've learned about storms is that they're a part of life, and that storms will come to you whether you want them or not. The estimated value on this church, I don't know, that was post-first, I don't know, sometime during one of the renovations. Because we're in the floodplain, the estimated value on this whole piece with the land and everything is about $2 million. We've built a lot of places that cost that much, and the idea is that we will build safe refuges from that whole world. But the storm comes to us, whether you want it or not. And the idea of the church as a safe refuge is false because the idea of the United States as a safe refuge is false. And the idea of safe refuges is just not what we're about. You look at Peter in the boat. He says, may I come to you? Jesus doesn't go, no, it's not safe. Stay in the boat. That's what everybody else is saying. But Jesus says, come on. Jesus' desire for Peter was not to stay in the safety of the boat. There's a great quote that ships are safer at port, but that's not what ships are made for. Churches, people of faith are safer somewhere, but that's not what we're made for. We have built all these ideas, this idea of a church as a safe refuge, the idea of a house as a safe refuge, the idea of a school in Connecticut as a safe refuge, the idea of the United States as a safe refuge. And for some reason, I think, and I can say this because it's the last day, how we don't get this, when you look across the sea, what's the one civilized, wealthy nation that nobody wants to live in besides Colombia? It's Israel. It's the promised land. The least safe refuge is the promised land. Because we're not meant to be about safe refuges. And you thought the church was supposed to be a safe place where everybody's nice and everybody gets along and where floods never happen. Well, sorry. It's not meant to be a safe refuge. The word sanctuary, somewhere in cowboy movies and war stories about the guy going in there claiming sanctuary where you can't touch me, that's not in the word sanctuary. Sanctuary means sacred, holy, and set apart. Not set apart from danger, but set apart for God. And where God is always is out in that storm. And as churches, if you want to ask anybody in any other churches, because we think we're unique, but we're not that. Well, the flood thing doesn't happen to everybody, but you get the idea in that churches that think they're supposed to be safe from the storm, or houses, or homes, or families, or nations that want to be safe from the storm, end up bringing storms into their houses, their churches, and their nations. The storms are real. The storms are part of life. They come to me in that office. They come in the sanctuary. They come in whatever life you've got. I know, because those stories that we don't ever tell during joys and concerns, I happen to know them, some of them. We're never meant to be the safe refuge. We're meant to be people who get storms. We're meant to be people who go out into storms. That's what we do. We go out. Peter says, okay, if that's you, the word he says is, he's walking on the water, he says, I am, which if you know Jewish and Hebrew, Exodus 3, I am is the biggie. So he's saying, I am God right here. And he goes, okay, Lord, if you are Lord, tell me to come to you. He says, come on. And here's the kicker. And here's what I didn't really get about this until this week. And that's, I encourage you to write sermons because you have to pay attention to stuff. See, I always thought the contrast was simple. I always thought the contrast was either you're in the boat with the disciples, which probably isn't that safe anyway because the storm's coming and they're fighting the waves, or you're out in the storm with Jesus. And that's the call. I always thought that was it. That was the choice. The choice is either you're in the boat or you're out with God among us or Jesus, however you want to talk about it, or Howard, whatever you got, in that storm. But that's not it. Peter's not out in the storm with Jesus. Peter is out in the storm trying to get to Jesus. And pay attention, because this is a big deal. The call of faith is not to walk through your life with God. The call of faith is to go and try and find Him. God apparently is a hide-and-go-seek player. Think about it. In Genesis, Adam and Eve are hanging out at this tree. Where is God? Apparently hiding behind some tree going, where are they? Instead of going to Him, they talk about Him. And we mess that up a lot. Instead of talking to God, we talk about God. You can spend all the time you want to talking about whether or not Jesus actually walked on water, but that's what people in the boat talk about. You think that's really Jesus? Is He really walking on water? I looked it up to try to get some help online. I found some guy who has figured out that the lake was probably frozen because of some weird effect and the other. More power to you. I just don't have time for that. And that's okay because that's a safe conversation. Who is Jesus really? Yeah, that's good. You can stay in the boat and lock yourselves inside any church or any school or wherever. I think the problem with seminaries is we ought to put them in the worst war-torn Africa, and those that live would probably make good ministers, but that's a different story altogether. Who cares whether Jesus walks on the water or not? Because you can't figure it out, and I think you missed the point. It's Peter's willing to go out there and look for Him. Peter's willing to go out into the storm and say, okay, where are you? When we did the study of Mark, and what sticks out in my mind is in that first chapter, Jesus goes off and is praying, and Peter comes and says, hey, where have you been? Everybody's looking for you. And Jesus doesn't go to them and say, hey, it's okay, I'm right here. Here I am. He goes, oh, let's go to the next town. Those who are looking have a decision. They can go home and stay there and do whatever, or they can go chasing Him. And throughout Mark, He keeps leaving. You can't find Him if you're not looking. The second thing we think about church, besides being a safe refuge that I have come to discover is wrong, is that line about house of God. Somewhere along the way, David wanted to build a house for God way back in the Old Testament, and he says, A, you're not the guy, and B, I don't need your stinking house. Because He's always out there. Jesus keeps running away, and they have to chase Him. He sends them out in the boat without Him, and if they weren't scared because of the storm, they wouldn't be looking for Him. When was the time this church sent the greatest percentage of people out into the community to do work? When we got flooded. The best work we did as a church as far as serving others was after the flood. And why did we go and do that? Because we got it. We understood what it was like, what it felt like for people with their homes. Because we got flooded in our homes. But we forget. And so you sit around waiting for the next storm. Peter had the courage to go out and look for him. Pay attention to the New Testament. Paul is not the guy who goes out looking for God and or walks with God throughout Europe, writing all these letters to churches. He's the guy that Jesus showed up on the road to Damascus, the time and place. He didn't expect to see him there. He shows up and says, "Hey, why are you persecuting me?" "I don't know." But that surprise changed his life, because from that point forward, he went to Rome, Corinth, Galatia, Ephesus. He got all the letters. He's just going, "Okay, where are you? I know you're out here. You surprised me before." I mean, the one time you think you'd be able to find Jesus is when he's dead, right? That guy doesn't run away, but they can't find him. And they finally find him, and he goes up into heaven, which, that's the part I really don't get, frozen lake or not. But the point being is, it's like, okay, you found me. Now see if you can find me again. If you want to understand theology, then I need you to pay attention to the youth of this church, because there's a game that we have loved more than any other game, and that is sardines. And yes, we've played it in every room of this building except this one, mostly. We tried not to do that. But the point of sardines is this. One person hides and everybody goes and looks for them. And if you find them, you hide with them. And you think it wouldn't take long. But in this church, there are so many unique crannies. It has taken a lot longer. And it just takes a while. And once you find them, you hide with them. Until you hear everybody laughing and giggling, you realize that everybody's gone. Somewhere, that's the image of God. Is the reason for churches are to get people together so that together you can look for God. So that when you find him, God's going to go hide again and you go looking again. Here's the understanding that I have of my leaving. And it really is the fault of the stewardship sermons. And it wasn't the sermon that I was preaching, it was the sermon that I was hearing. The sermon that I was preaching, we did the series on Abram and Sarah, and God says to them, "Go to a place that I will show you, and I will bless you so that you may be a blessing." And we thought, how wonderful for Williamson County, "I will bless you so that you can be a blessing." And so that's what the theme was, you're blessed, be a blessing. But what I kept hearing in my mind was a different sermon altogether. It was this question, so hey, can you go somewhere that you don't know? Can you go forward trusting that I'll show you? And I said, no. That's not the way I do things, and you wouldn't be asking that of me. But then the text rolls around again. I have to read it again. And then you go, psst, I'm just talking. The whole leap of faith thing I have always thought of as interesting, and I like the coffin quote, "We leap and try and grow wings." I just didn't realize there's a leap and then there's that fall. But then God dared me, and I was that kid who would jump from the tree. No, I dare you. Okay. I got the double dog dare from God. But that's the point. It's the job of all of us to go out into the storms, not knowing, but trusting that God will find us. Because you see, God doesn't like to stay hidden too long. He just gets really mad, apparently, when people don't look. And that's where that whole shepherd image comes in. It's the sheep's job to keep looking for the shepherd. And if you go too far off, the shepherd will come and find you. Now, he brings that stick with a big crook in it, which I don't find very comforting, but you get the point. That's what we're about. And that's what we're going to embark on. And we thank you for the time together. We thank you for the willingness to go through all we've been through, storm after storm after storm, and to tell you that it's your job to go through the next storm after the next storm after the next storm, and just say, you can be a church that keeps doing this, and when the building's messy, you'll fix it. Or you can realize that the building is just so you can get together and figure out what you're going to do. And that's not my calling. That's your calling. Welcome to adolescence. The life before you has tremendous potential. And God is already saying, I'm out here. Are you going to come looking? Let us pray. God, we like better to think of the church as a safe place, different than the rest of the world. We like to think of the church as a house of God where we can put you on our shelf and, like a good book, pull you down anytime we have a question we need to answer.
But God, yet we still have this image of Peter who was willing to go, and you said, come on. You called him out to a place that was beyond his imagination, and he failed tremendously and fell deeply, and he reached out, and you were there. So God, as we go forward into Monday, as we go forward into Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and every day after, help us, we pray, as we are searching for you. For what other search is there, storm or not? We would be your people in this place and time, and that's why we've had the courage to join so many before us and gather and pray together as we were taught, saying, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, and thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen. Our hymn is Guide Me, O Thou Great Jehovah, number 281.